Good evening. If everybody could please make their way to their seats. The town clerk informs me that we have a quorum, and I hereby call this meeting to order. My name is Kate Blake, and it is my honor to serve as your moderator for the second night of this 2022 annual town meeting. Before we get started, a couple of preliminary matters. First, as a reminder, you can follow along with the closed captioning on your mobile device. The school's Wi-Fi is LS After Dark. Please note that there is no password for this Wi-Fi. Once you have an internet connection, please visit sudbury.ma.us/townmeeting/captions. Please also ensure that your cell phones are on silent. Second, everyone must be in a seat. We cannot have anyone standing in the aisles or at their seat unless they've been called upon to speak. Fire exits are at the rear of the auditorium and the Rogers Theater where you enter, as well as in front through the stage. Also, as a reminder, we have designated the following areas as mass expected seating. The accessible seating in the main auditorium, located in the frontmost and rearmost left and right seats of the auditorium, the balcony in the main auditorium, and the Rogers Theater, also known as the Black Box. Please be respectful of each other and everyone's decisions regarding masking and distancing. I will not repeat what I said at the opening of town meeting about procedural matters. But if you need a refresher, or if this is your first meeting, I urge you to consult with the first section of the warrant. This section provides a thorough summary of basic town meeting procedures. A big thank you to the Girl Scouts, who are back selling refreshments tonight with plans to support the World Central Kitchen's Chefs for Ukraine through a Take Action project. The Girl Scouts are also manning the microphones tonight. We have Sudbury Girl Scout cadets Anya Custer, Taylor Garner, Taylor Altiero, Ayana Allen. We have Girl Scout Juniors, Dylan Alterio, Emily Kudrevet, Riley Chersey, and Penny Ryan. A few quick reminders about debate. If you wish to be heard, please hold up your card and wait to be recognized. Once you have the microphone, please begin by slowly and clearly stating your name and address. Please also note there's no need to turn the microphones on and off. I have also been asked by Sudbury TV to ask everybody on the stage to also not turn off their microphones. All questions and comments should be addressed to me. I will decide how to direct questions. In the interest of allowing a full but efficient discussion of a broad range of topics, I ask that you not reiterate points that have already been made or ask questions that have already been answered. I also ask that everyone be respectful of each other and opinions that are being voiced. I will not permit clapping, booing, hissing, or other audible noises. Esme Green has agreed to help me with the timing of speakers and presentations tonight. And with that, we will begin with Article 19, motion by Chair Roberts. It should be on. If you just start talking into it. Them on, please.
Yeah. Okay, now we know. All right, so move in the words of the article, but deleting the words eminent domain, therefrom, with the sum of $15,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Beth Sudmeyer, environmental planner, please.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Moderator.
And good evening to everyone. I'm Beth Stidmeyer, the Environmental Planner from the Planning and Community Development Department. And I am first presenting Article 19, the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Phase 2D Acquisition of Land. This article is being presented on behalf of the Select Board. This is the first of two articles related to right-of-way processes associated with Phase 2D of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. So these articles are required in order for the project to advance to the construction phase. As you're aware, the town has invested tremendous amounts of time, energy, and funding to the design of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, and we're really close to the finish line now. We are wrapping up the design and the right-of-way process. The environmental permitting has come a long, long way over the last several months. We're very close to the completion of the design and anticipate we'll be able to move to construction in a year, but we do need these town meeting votes in order to be able to do that, and I'll explain more about that now. So again, for the context, this is the north-south corridor, a 4.4-mile section of rail that's owned by Mass DOT Rail Division. It is part of a larger network, a regional network trail system, the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, which is proposed to go from Lowell to Framingham. Right now, the communities to the north of us have a beautiful rail trail that has been constructed incrementally, starting in the north and then moving south. So just to the north of us now in Concord, some of you may have seen the rail trail that opened for use just the last couple of years. And right now, the bridge over Route 2 is under construction and anticipated to open later this summer. So that will mean that there's continuity and open rail trail available for use from Lowell to Concord, just a half mile north of the town line with Sudbury. Is a stretch that's not completed in Concord, and that section will be constructed as part of the same 4.4-mile stretch in Sudbury. So again, the town line of Concord and Sudbury is the start of the Sudbury section for the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Phase 2D, and the terminus is in the south then, just north of Route 20, near the junction with the Mass Central Rail Trail. There's been extensive public process associated with the town's activities and the design that's gone on for about a decade. And more recently, there's been the creation of a Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Advisory Task Force. And we've gone through the design public hearing that's hosted by Mass DOT as their partner in the project and will be responsible for the construction contract. The environmental permitting and many public meetings associated with that have transpired, and it's been a robust and dynamic public process. So the town has invested to date about $1.2 million in the design of the project. Again, you know, these votes this evening are really a culmination of a large investment made by the town over a long period of time, and we're getting very close to seeing the reality of that investment. The construction funds then come from a state, federal, local partnership. So the town has received over $12 million allocated funds from the Boston Metropolitan Planning Organization. This means that Mass DOT, Mass Department of Transportation, and federal highway dollars are going to be used to construct the design that the town has put forward. So again, we've overcome and achieved many milestones related to the design of the project. Mass DOT has many incremental design review steps, which we've completed the 100% design submission, and there were no issues associated with that and the Mass DOT review of that 100% design. So our next step is this month we'll be submitting the plan specification and estimate package to Mass DOT for their review. Environmental permits are nearly complete. We just have a few federal reviews that are still ongoing. And the right-of-way process has been very active, and this town meeting or these town meeting votes tonight will help complete or advance towards completion of the right-of-way process. There's two components to Article 19, the acquisition of land. The first is that the town will be entering into a lease agreement with Mass DOT for use of the rail corridor, this 4.4-mile corridor, for a rail trail, a bike path, or a multi-use path. This will be a 99-year lease at a minimal cost of $10. The other portion is the acquisition of temporary easements. These are easements on private properties adjacent to the rail corridor. They're all temporary in nature, and many of them are very minor. Some of them don't even anticipate that that there will be activities conducted on the easement areas, but it's that MassDOT, when they have activities that are within 5 feet of a property line, they require an easement. So some of these easements are very small, may not have any impacts at all, and others will have very minor construction activity impacts. The total cost for the acquisition of the temporary easements is anticipated to be, for all of the easements, is anticipated to be about $15,000. And the landowners do have an option of donating these temporary easements rather than the town needing to acquire them. This is the list of the temporary easements associated with the rail trail. The last column shows how many square feet will be potentially impacted or are part of that easement area. And with that, I can take questions related to this article.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you are standing, please make your way to a seat. Can I have a report from the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Advisory Task Force, please? Hold on 1 second, Mr. Pransky. Mr. Pransky's in the balcony with one of the microphones.
No?
There you
yes.
go.
Glenn Pransky, 102 Barton Drive. On behalf of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Advisory Task Force, we enthusiastically and unanimously support Article 19.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a position?
Finance Committee voted to support 7-0.
Thank you. Does the Select Board have a position?
The Select Board supports 3-2.
Thank you. Yes.
The Select Board supports this 5-0.
Thank you. Is there anyone who wishes to be heard on Article 19? In the front right here, please. Please stand and say your name.
Chair Justin Finicum, Planning Board, 46 Singletary Lane. At our meeting on April 27th, 2022, the Planning Board and Master Plan Implementation Committee voted unanimously to support this warrant article.
Yep. In the back, or in the middle, I should say, of the front with the glasses, please.
Robert Abrams, 161 Knobscot Road. I have a motion to amend. The motion is to amend Article 19 as printed in the warrant by deleting the comma after the word gift in the first line and replacing that comma with the word or, and by deleting the words eminent domain or otherwise, so that the revised portion of the first sentence reads gift or purchased, comma, fee or leasehold. I have the three copies, Madam Moderator.
Thank you.
And very simply, what this does is the board, in its wisdom, chose to remove the words eminent domain, and I agree with that. But I think unless we also remove the words or otherwise, then eminent domain could still be used even though the words haven't been removed. And I will defer to town council if he suggests I'm wrong about that, but I believe that this is just a grammatical change so that eminent domain could not be used, which is what I think is the intent in the way the motion is on the screen now. This is my 50th year at town meeting in Sudbury, and in my memory, we have never in the town of Sudbury used eminent domain to take anything. And just by way of one example, at the bottom of Goodman Hill Road, from Cato Road down to the Best Friends dog facility, there is no walkway because those owners would not, or some of them, would not give an easement to the town, and the town wouldn't take it. And there are many, many other examples. The town has never taken land by eminent domain, and I would just like to make the grammatical change so that it's clear what the intent that no eminent domain is. Thank you.
Yep, somebody. First.
In the middle, in the back.
Yep, in the middle, in the back. And is there a second to this motion to amend?
Second.
Thank you.
Gregory Hamill, 16 Pine Street. By deleting, you mean by replacing?
Mr. Abrams, did you want to clarify that?
No, before him.
Oh.
That statement on the board.
I believe, Mr. Thompson, are you working on changing that slide so that everybody can see what it's going to say? He's working on typing it so everybody can see it.
Thank you. But it does mean replacing, not delete.
So town council is going to speak on this issue.
Good evening. Lee Smith, town council, KP Law. I'll say first, while the proposed amendment is being prepared, that it's the practice of our law firm, whenever there is an article drafted where it's proposing to acquire any interest in property, we use the words as are printed in the original warrant, to acquire by gift, purchase, eminent domain, or otherwise. The reason we do that is because it gives as much as a broad range of authority to the select board to then determine how they in fact want to acquire the property when the time comes. If there happened to be a situation where they wanted to acquire property by eminent domain, that would require further action on their part to actually meet, vote, and adopt an order of taking. So that would be a two-step process. In this instance, the select board debated the question about whether to include, keep the words eminent domain in the article, and they voted to delete them, and that is now reflected in the warrant. As for the proposed amendment seeking to also delete the word otherwise, I don't have a problem with that from a legal perspective, but it is my opinion that if the word otherwise was left in, that in itself does not provide sufficient authority from town meeting to, in fact, acquire property by eminent domain.
Any other questions or comments on this motion to amend? Anyone in Black Box? Sorry. Any questions? No? Okay. So let's vote on the motion to amend Article 19. All in favor, please raise your cards. And this is requires a majority vote. Thank you. Please put your cards down. All opposed to the motion to amend? Does it look like a new black box?
What's the
I'm going to ask just for everybody to put their cards down and stand. So all in favor of the motion to amend, please stand. Okay, please sit down, and then all opposed to the motion to amend Article 19, please stand. Thank you. That motion to amend fails. Back to the main discussion on Article 19. Please raise your card if you wish to be heard. Anybody in the balcony? Okay. I don't see anybody in the balcony, but if you could go to the back center with the gentleman in the hat, please.
Dave Jacob, 328 Old Lancaster. If the words eminent domain are stricken from this, does that raise the possibility that the purchase may not happen, that the other ways that we could go about getting this easement may not suffice and the easement may not be granted, which would in effect stop the project? Is that
Town Council?
Thanks. With respect to the acquisition of the leasehold area of the right-of-way owned by MassDOT, eminent domain is not needed. We've got the form and substance of the lease agreement, which has largely been agreed to in principle, so eminent domain is not in question for that. And I'll let Beth speak to the temporary easements.
Ms. Sudemeyer.
Thank you. It's a very good question, and we did spend a lot of time considering if there were any obstacles that might arise that would affect the rail trail project design itself. And we've consulted with our design engineers and determined that the temporary easements, if any of them, should not be possible to reach a final negotiation with the property owners would not have a detrimental impact to the project. So we are aware that without eminent domain, we would still be able to successfully complete the rail trail project.
Anybody else who wishes to be heard? Mr. Williamson in the front, please.
Richard Williamson, 22 Farmstead Lane. When I was young and in my 40s, the possibility of converting the old railroad beds in Sudbury to bike paths arose. And I said, gee, that sounds like a great idea. I wonder how I can contribute to the process. So I'm going to speak on behalf of all four articles, but starting with Article 19. This is an anniversary week, if you will. It was 37 years ago that a state representative from Chelmsford was approached by a bunch of mothers of young kids pushing strollers along, and they said, you know, there's this old unused rail bed. Couldn't we turn this into a path, a recreational path that everybody could use? And a fellow, a state rep by the name of Bruce Freeman, his ears perked up. He was not a cyclist, but he still thought that was a great idea. And so he made some motions in the state House of Representatives to get the process started. But before the next step was taken, Bruce died, had cancer, and his replacement, Carol Clevin, as a state representative from Chelmsford, put forth a motion in the House of Representatives to designate the Bruce N. Freeman Memorial Bike Path. That was in 1987. And so I continued to have my ears perked up about the possibilities. And in 1988, when I was in my 40s, still a young man, decided that I'd try to get something done about this rail trail. And people started to ask me, gee, this is a sort of a strange idea. Do you think you will ever see a rail trail in Sudbury in your lifetime? And I said, of course, it's a long time ahead before this will be done. Well, I'm now in my 80s. A lot of time has passed. And I still keep getting that same question. Do you think you will see a rail trail in Sudbury while you're still alive? And rather than a cavalier answer, I have to pause for a moment because I'm in my 80s. I've had two younger siblings who've passed away in recent years. So I'm feeling more mortal than I did back when I was in my 40s. So I think I'm really enthusiastic about finally getting to the last steps for this rail trail. Now, the bad news is that I'm not getting any younger. But the good news is that with construction starting late this year, I think I may actually see a rail trail while I'm still around.
Anybody else wish to be heard? No clapping. No clapping. I'm sorry. Sure. Chair Roberts?
So I just wanted to clarify one thing, just to make sure it's crystal clear for the auditorium and others, that the Select Board voted to remove the term eminent domain from the motion, and we have just heard from Town Council that the phrase or otherwise would not provide sufficient legal authority to carry out eminent domain. Okay, just want to make sure that's clear. Thank you.
Okay, I think somebody in the front, towards the front, wanted to speak. Yep, right in the center, please.
Thank you. I'm Charles Morton, 35 Julian's Way. I just have a clarification.
Can you stand up while you make your remarks?
Sorry.
Thank you.
Am I correct in reading that the $1 million that's already been spent on all the planning has already been spent, and the $12 million it would take to actually build the rail trail through Sudbury is coming from outside of the town funds? That's federal funds and state funds. So we've already spent what we need to spend on the planning, and now it's a matter of taking this grant money or not. Do I have that correct, such that that $12 million would go to some other town school project if we didn't take it, but we've already spent our money on the planning. It's just a matter of approving this $12 million or not.
Ms. Sudenminer, do you mind addressing the funding issue?
Sure, thank you. It is correct. So the approximately $1.2 million has been a town allocation to planning and design, and we are wrapping up the utilization of those funds that have been allocated. A later article does speak to a few more design funds and construction funds from the town that we're looking to utilize during the construction phase. And then the $12+ million is a state and federal allocation that we've been on the list to receive those funds for 5 years. It takes a long time to get on the list to be able to receive those funds. And so now we're at the point, we're in the federal fiscal year when we can utilize those funds, and that's why we've got a timeline and a deadline associated with meeting all these approvals, getting all the permits, completing the design, and we're very close. So, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? In the front, could you just stand so that the Girl Scouts can better see you, please?
Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road. I may have missed this in Mr. Meyer's presentation, but I'm curious about the temporary easements. Typically, they're for construction purposes, and they have a limited lifespan. Is that true, and what's the lifespan?
Ms. Sudemeyer.
Temporary easements during construction, temporary impacts, temporary easements associated with them. When we enter into the agreement to put an easement on the land, they will be 4-year easements. We anticipate that the construction will only take 2 years, but we just wanted to have a little bit of a bridge for this time prior to construction initiating, as well as if there is any overrun during the construction phase.
Anyone else? The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 19 is 2/3. All in favor of Article 19, please raise your cards. All, thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. That passes by well more than 2/3. No clapping, Mr. Simon. Article 20, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move that the parcels shown on the plan entitled Massachusetts Department of Transportation Highway Division Plan and Profile of Bruce Freeman Rail Trail in the Town of Sudbury, Middlesex County, final right-of-way submission, dated January 18, 2022, prepared by Fussin O'Neill and on file with the town clerk, as it may be amended, and as described in the Select Board report on Article 20, be dedicated, consistent with the purposes for which they are presently held, for establishing, constructing, operating, improving, and maintaining an improved multi-use trail for non-motorized transportation, including access thereto, and for all other purposes for which rail trails are used in the Commonwealth.
Is there a second? There is. Ms. Studemeyer for a presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So for Article 20, this is the second of the right-of-way process-related articles for the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Project Phase 2D, that north-south 4.4-mile section that we were just discussing. And this one is related to dedications. Now, in the warrant, the article was phrased as it referred to easements instead of dedications. And these are all associated with town-owned properties that will have minor impacts associated with the rail trail project, because the town is the proponent of the project and has decided, elected, for these impacts to occur, and because these impacts are consistent with the intended use of those town-owned properties, we, through discussions with town council and MassDOT, who has the requirements in place for these easements or dedications to be made, it was determined that it was sort of a streamlined and simpler process to pursue a dedication for these town-owned properties rather than an easement. If it would have been an easement, it would have been the town granting itself an easement, which doesn't seem to make that much sense. And through this further coordination, we determined that MassDOT would be satisfied with a dedication of these town-owned areas to rail trail purposes. So again, the point of this is really that Federal Highway, when they grant these federal funds to a project, require that there's a prolonged positive impact associated with their investment. They want to ensure that, you know, what is constructed as part of the rail trail will continue to be utilized and provide a public benefit. So, as it's been indicated, the revision was made since the warrant was prepared in January to change this to a dedication rather than an easement. And the parcels that I will show in the next table and that are printed in the table in the warrant are still the same parcels that we're referring to. There's 9 areas within 5 town-owned properties. Some of these are temporary impacts, and some of them are permanent impacts. The town determined that these impacts are consistent with the permitted use of the land and have been determined to be de minimis impacts. The Park and Recreation Commission and the Conservation Commission that have care, custody, and control for these properties voted unanimously to support the article, and there was a public notice related to the review of this proposal, and no comments were received. the official determination on behalf of Federal Highway for these types of impacts to conservation and recreation areas is that the use will not adversely affect the activities, features, and attributes that qualify the property for protection under 4F. And 4F is the structure within Federal Highway that requires them to determine that there's no negative impacts to conservation and recreation parcels and properties associated with their investments. Sorry. So this is the list of the town-owned properties and the particular areas of impact. So the first three are associated with the Broadacres Farm property. At Broadacres Farm, the first one is associated with the wetlands replication area, so associated with wetland impacts that are going to occur within the rail trail corridor. The wetland impacts are not on town-owned property. They're within the rail trail corridor. And we will mitigate for those impacts by creating wetlands on the town-owned property in the pasture area of Broadacres Farm. The next two associated with Broadacres Farm, and I should note that Broadacres Farm is on Morse Road. The next two are associated with the parking lot that's going to be constructed within the recreation parcel adjacent to Featherland Park at Broadacres Farm. And when that parcel was acquired, it was determined that it was intended for recreational purposes, and a parking lot associated with the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail was anticipated to be constructed there. The next town-owned property is Parkinson Field. This is off of Hudson Road next to the tie sales, next to the intersection with Peckham Road. And we are constructing a connector path, basically a sidewalk that'll connect the rail trail to the existing parking lot at Parkinson's Field. So there's both temporary and permanent impacts associated with that. And then finally, on North Road, there'll be minor impacts to Davis Farm Conservation Area when we widen the sidewalk that is just adjacent to North Road. This will be part of a connector path that goes from the rail trail to the parking lot that's at Davis Field. And so there will also be impacts to the Davis Field parking area. The connector path will travel adjacent to the parking lot there so that people can park and travel safely from the parking lot at Davis Field to the junction of the rail trail. In the interest of time, I won't show the figures because those have been available, but if there are questions, I can take a closer look at any of these locuses.
Can I have a report from the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Advisory Task Force, Mr. Pransky in the balcony, please?
On behalf of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Advisory Task Force, we unanimously support this article.
Finance Committee for a report.
Finance Committee voted for approval 8-0.
Select Board for a report.
The Select Board supports this article 5-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 20? Mr. Simon, in the front, please.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. First, I would like to just say a couple of words to the Select Board for their efforts in bringing the rail trail to this point tonight where we're going to get past the finish line. We have seen the light at the end of the tunnel, and now we're there. I need to thank my friend Dick Williamson, who has spent so much time, so much effort working with me to make this a reality. Now it's going to happen, and we'll see shovels in the ground in the next several months. But most of all, I want to thank each of you who has come out at town meeting after town meeting. When it's come to the vote at the ballot box, you have been supportive every step of the way. I cannot tell you how gratified I am and appreciative for what you have done, and I would love to see each of you and your children out there on the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail in the next couple of years when we can greet each other in peace, in harmony, and in exercise and fellowship. So I want to thank all of you for what you have done. It's only possible because of you. Thank you.
Mr. Simon, if you could just... One of the Girl Scouts can bring it to you.
Justin Pinnicum, Planning Board, 46 Singletary Lane. The Planning Board and Master Plan Implementation Committee voted unanimously to support this warrant article.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 20? Questions? Okay, in the front here, please. Please stand up so that the Girl Scouts can see you.
Hello, Ben Carmel, 24 Thornberry Lane, Vice Chair of Park and Rec. I know Beth mentioned this in the presentation, but I just wanted to reiterate that after numerous meetings and review of plans directly with Beth, the Park and Rec Commission voted to unanimously support this article.
Anybody else? Is there a hand in the back? The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 20 is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. Anyone opposed, please raise your cards. Okay. That passes unanimously. At this point, I would like to recognize Chair Roberts for a motion.
Yes. Move that the town vote to take up consideration of Article 47 and Article 48 immediately following the conclusion of Article 20.
Is there a second? There is. Does the Select Board have a position on this?
Yes. I was authorized by the Select Board to make this motion. This is an effort to make the meeting more efficient and to put like articles together. These are moving up CPC articles, Article 47, Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Design and Construction north of the Mass Central Rail Trail, and Article 48, Bruce Freeman Rail Trail Design and Construction south of the Mass Central Rail Trail.
Thank you. This is a motion that requires 4/5 vote. Does anybody wish to be heard on the request, the motion to move Articles 47 and 48 to now rather than delaying them later on? Mr. Abrams, please stand up.
Robert Abrams, 161 Knobscot Road. I would merely point out, as has been pointed out to this town meeting many, many times over the past several years, if you do this, there will be a mass exodus from the hall after the rail trail is approved, and you will have trouble getting a quorum to complete the town meeting.
Mr. Polk.
Eric Polk, 28 Ruddock Road. I'm speaking as a private citizen. I urge defeat of this motion. For those of us who revere this open caucus of democracy.
Mr. Polk, we haven't. Are you talking about in opposition to Articles 47, 48?
I'm talking about in opposition.
To advancing it. Okay.
For those of us who revere this open caucus of democracy, but also have other responsibilities, including children and jobs, it is the process and protocol, as well as the timing for the information published in our warrant that is relied upon to perform our civic duties. The CPA was passed by Sudbury after I began my 27 years of town meetings. But since then, I cannot recall a time when CPA articles were taken out of order. Additionally, the Select Board voted, after multiple deliberations, to proceed with the organization of town meeting as was published to the public with no subsequent information regarding this change. During their deliberations, the Select Board noted that there were multiple articles that contained motions for the same subject matter, yet the warrant order is what was decided, voted, and published. Conceding to the request of a citizen petitioner proponent to group these articles has the perception of appealing more broadly to a special interest than to that of the greater public good. This is a change of convenience, not necessity. Was the CPC notified so that potential reordering and of their representatives might attend and make their reports? Will the CPC summary presentation be made early, or will that summary presentation wait for the body of CPC articles, or will it be made twice? Again, I urge defeat of this motion.
I'm going to have a vote on this because I don't want to have a significant delay on this issue. So as I mentioned, this is a 4/5 vote to take Articles 47 and 48 out of turn. All in favor of this, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. I'm just going to have everybody stand just one last time, and then I will call the vote. Everybody in favor of advancing these, please stand. Thank you. Everyone opposed, please stand. That motion does not pass. We will deal with that later in the night. Article 21, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move to accept as a public way the following way: Huckleberry Lane from Old Lancaster Road to Dead End, a distance of 453 feet plus or minus, as laid out by the Select Board in accordance with the descriptions and plan entitled Acceptance Plan of Huckleberry Lane in Sudbury, Massachusetts, prepared for Allegius Homes Company by Thomas Land Surveyors and Engineering Consultants, Inc., dated September 17, 2014, and twice revised on December 12, 2016, and March 16, 2017, on file in the Town Clerk's Office, and to authorize the Select Board to acquire by purchase, by gift, or by eminent domain, an easement or fee simple over the way shown on said plan and any associated drainage, utility, or other easements for all purposes for which public ways are used in the town of Sudbury.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Manager Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Henry Hayes, Town Manager. So, Article 21. Actually, before I say Article 21, I want to say thank you to the logistics and planning team. This accounts against my time. I'm okay with it. The logistics planning team regarding town meeting, more specifically, I want to say thank you very much to the front office, to Patty, to Layla, to Carol, to Elaine, and to our council. It is amazing amount of work that goes into putting together town council, and thank you very much for all that you do. Article 21, street acceptance, Huckleberry Lane. So ultimately, Huckleberry Lane is described as you see on the next slide. It is from Old Lancaster Road to a dead end, a distance of about 453 feet plus or minus. The recommendation from Department of Public Works is that it and states that it meets legal requirements for acceptance. Acceptance will enable routine maintenance, stormwater management, and snow plowing. Once accepted, it will be added to the town's inventory for state Chapter 90 funding. This is Article 21. Thank you, Madam Moderator.
Does the Finance Committee have a report?
No report.
Does the Select Board have a report?
The Select Board supports Article 21, 5-0.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 21? The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 21 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. If anyone is opposed, please raise your card. I'm just going to say that because people at home could not hear what that was. A point of order that the warrant says, I think, two-thirds, and I called it as a majority, and I'm going to refer to town council.
So as printed in the warrant, there was language that included the potential for an appropriation being made. That was removed from the motion, so that drops the quantum of vote to majority.
That passes by well more than majority. Article 22, motion by Select Board Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $300,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Chair Roberts.
Good evening. My name is Jennifer Roberts. I'm chair of the Sudbury Select Board. I'm here to present to you Article 22. This is the first of two articles for the Fairbank Community Center. This project is being overseen by the town manager and the Permanent Building Committee, but this article is sponsored by the Select Board. Questions at the end will be answered by the full project team. On slide one, this is a slide from the February Town Manager's 2022 Financial Condition of the Town presentation, and you'll see highlighted in red some words that are important to note. Unforeseen cost increases have negatively impacted town projects and advancements, like the Fairbank Community Center and the Fire Station 2 enhancements. Labor and material costs have increased dramatically, affecting most large functional areas in various ways. That sets the stage a little bit for this article. An overall very high-level overview of the Fairbank project. This also applies to Article 33, which will come thereafter. So why is there an ask for more funds? So cost inflation and supply chain issues due to the pandemic will likely add costs to construction. We are seeking separate funding, and that will reduce the cost of AV furniture and furniture fixtures and equipment within the overall budget. The budgeted costs of AV and FFE and FF&E have risen since the feasibility study was presented at the 2022 annual town meeting. The Permanent Building Committee and the project management team have produced a complete building budget with thoughtful value engineering, but certain elements need to be deferred, changed, or eliminated, such as square footage in the building, the type of materials to build the building, some architectural elements. But very important to emphasize is that programming will not be affected by these changes. The funding requests are not part of the construction bid, which was carried out in March 2022. These are separate bids that will follow the construction bid, and that is why these two articles can be presented to you today, this evening at town meeting. This is the article for Article 22, Fairbank Community Center and Audiovisual Equipment Funding. Again, the article reads, to see if the town will vote to raise and appropriate or transfer from available funds the sum of $300,000 or any other sums or sums to be expended under the direction of the town manager for the purchase of audiovisual and related equipment for the Fairbank Community Center project to address needs and associated costs, therefore, or act on anything relative thereto. You can read the report, if you wish, in your warrant. So, some high-level points. So what is this AV technology request?
This includes equipment such as TVs, monitors, assisted listening systems, microphones, speakers, and projection equipment. The building will be constructed to be ready to be outfitted with this equipment, and this equipment then can be put in the building. The budget status, which I already touched upon, the feasibility study assumed a very basic level of AV that was standard at the time. This was before the pandemic. The initial assumption did not assume hybrid meetings, increased needs identified in the pandemic, or new ways of using audiovisual in a community center. And so the need is that there's an overall societal expectation and desire and demand for enhanced AV technology. There are increased expectations as a result of the pandemic, and these are expected to continue to move forward. I think many of us can relate to this in our day-to-day lives or in our careers, that more and more is being done remotely or via hybrid meetings, and we need to adapt to this change for our community center. The ask is $300,000 for free cash for the AV equipment. This is some direct feedback from the user groups about AV use. The user groups, three user groups of the Fairbank Community Center currently and in the future will be the Sudbury Public Schools, the Senior Center, and the Park and Recreation Department. I will read these as I think they are important to understand. The Sudbury Public Schools Audiovisual Needs Center on Professional Development, Collaboration, Training, Human Resources Onboarding, and Small and Large Group Staff Meetings. In the conference rooms, interactive screens and sound projection equipment are necessary to provide American with Disabilities Act, ADA access, and professional development opportunities. Offices and small meeting spaces need presentation equipment, like a display that can be linked to a computer. All the SBS spaces must be network and phone ready. For the Senior Center, the popularity and need for lifelong learning, fitness, and art classes at the Senior Center exemplify the necessity of technological capability to offer in-person, virtual, and hybrid classes in the multipurpose room, the fitness room, the arts room, and at least one to two other program rooms. The addition of assisted listening systems, or ALS, that provide amplification to headphones or hearing aids during classes or meetings will increase accessibility. To maximize accessibility, ALS should be included in as many program rooms as are practical. And then lastly, the Park and Recreation Department will utilize audiovisual technology for children, youth, and adults for virtual hybrid programming, as well as online access to additional programming. Also, public meetings held by the Park and Recreation Commission and other entities in the town can use this AV equipment, and it will provide the ability to live stream community events that are held at the community center. So next are some examples of AV technology in other locations that were have been visited throughout this project. The first on the upper left is the Scituate Senior Center multipurpose room. You'll see there's a ceiling mounted projector and there's a screen that comes down. The lower left is the Scituate Senior Center. This is the program room. Above is the multipurpose room. In the program room, there's a wall-mounted monitor with a sound bar and a speaker. And then on the right, it's the Falmouth Senior Center with digital signage. And this is signage that can talk about anything from the weather to programming that's happening that day and offer a nice welcome to anyone entering the center. The next slides are actual design slides exhibiting what the Fairbank Community Center may look like. And so this is an example of the lobby and reception area and use of AV there. You'll see also digital signage toward the top, as I just described. And next is a Fairbank multipurpose room where AV will also be used. This is similar to Scituate, where there's a ceiling monitor, a projector screen, and a monitor on the wall with speakers in the ceiling. And it will also include an assisted listening system. The audiovisual budget, as I mentioned, the feasibility study assumed a very basic level of AV. This was pre-pandemic. Currently, the forecast, that was $50,000. The forecast, after many discussions with the user groups and a reflection and realization on the changes in the past couple years, the forecasted budget is now $353,000. That's a gap of about $303,000, and that's why we have a free cash request for $300,000 to fund this article. Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a report?
Finance Committee votes to not support this article by a vote of 4-4. As noted in our opening commentary, There needs to be a standardized approach for capital planning across all cost centers. This is a capital request that is being sought from free cash. As we have learned from multiple large capital projects recently, monitoring timelines and cost needs considerations to avoid significant unanticipated increases or subsequent asks from the town for additional funding of amenities such as this included in original project proposals needs to be avoided.
Does the select board have a report?
Yes, I don't have my notes, but I believe the select board supported this 3-2.
Is there a minority report on the select board? Mr. Schneller?
Yes. Just briefly, when we debated this article, on the dissenting side, you know, was the fact that the voted budget for Fairbanks was $28.8 million, which included construction costs, management, included audiovisual in the amount of $50,000, as mentioned. But it also included a substantial contingency amount of several million dollars. And during our discussion, was unable to get a clear explanation of whether any of that contingency, several million dollars of contingency, had already been touched, as well as the remarks that FinCom made about the use of free cash.
And is CIAC here to report? Yep, right in the back, please. Thank you.
Susan Asvedi and Chaffee, CIAC chair. The CIAC supports this article.
I'll now open up Article 22 for discussion. Ms. Nam.
Thank you. Jean Nam, 81 Newbridge Road. I'm excited that the Fairbank is going to get built finally. I think it'll be wonderful for this town. I do want to point out that for about 10 years now, many people, many faces that I see in this audience have been working on trying to organize and prioritize how we spend our money, how those articles appear in that town warrant every year. We've worked for 10 years, and finally this year, the select board approved a new version of the financial policies. It was very exciting. The select board agreed to it. The finance committee participated. The CIAC was involved. And again, 10 years of all these people and all these committees coming up with this financial policy, it was great. And it's not perfect, but it's an amazing start. This article, unfortunately, and the one that follows it, is in direct violation of these policies. So immediately out of the gate, we're violating the policies. And this article, as was stated above and verified by the PBC, the Building Commission, the name is escaping.
Permanent Building Committee?
Yes. If it doesn't pass this town meeting, it's going to be fine. The infrastructure will be there. We can take the year. We can follow the appropriate process that follows the policies, and we can do this next year, and the project won't be affected. So I urge you to vote no, because, again, 10 years of effort by many people across town to come up with nice financial policies, and we're violating it right out the gate. Thank you.
Ms. Rapinian in the middle, please.
Thank you, Kirsten Rapinian, 45 Harness Lane. I guess my question is, what policy is being violated, first of all? And then second of all, what happens if this article does not pass? Will it be that we have no audiovisual? What is the result of this not passing? If somebody could address that, please.
Sure. Chair Roberts, could you address that second question, please?
Yes, I was going to take the first part of that question and ask that the team could answer the second part.
Sure.
Of the question. So I believe Ms. Nam is referring to a policy whereby we have a capital improvement plan where there are a few months in the fall where capital projects are prioritized. And I believe the hope is that this would go through that process. I personally believe that this in itself is and was a separate capital project that is following its own bidding and construction timeline, and it's already been considered through that process, and these are critical parts of the project.
So do we have somebody here from Compass Project Management to answer questions? Okay, so this is Christopher Eberle. He is not a Sudbury resident, so he does need permission of the hall to speak. Is there anyone who would be opposed to him speaking tonight to answer questions about this project? Okay, thank you. Mr. Eberle?
So to address the couple of the questions that were raised, we do have project contingency. There is a project contingency that we have broken up between an owner's contingency and also from a construction contingency. Best practice is to reserve a certain amount of that contingency for unknowns during construction. Change orders happen for a multitude of reasons. And our job as the town's project manager is to ensure that we do not spend more than the budget that's allocated for the project. Within that owner's contingency, we do have a number of challenges that we've continued to review, and those have are risks that we monitor as we move forward to ensure that we have enough money to cover it, but we've also identified that there are certain shortfalls that we'll have with what's proposed for the budget versus what is proposed for the FF&E, and that's part of the reason for why the additional funding is needed. The specific question?
What would happen if the funding was not available?
So if the funding's not available at present, the can we advance to the last slide that I had?
Mr. Thompson?
Should be all the way at the end. So at present, with the forecast that we have, you can see here, this is an outline of the construction cost overall as it relates to, actually, it's the first slide. Sorry, Mark. Okay. Nope, not the first, the four back from the one that you're on. There you go. The orange and green one. So right here, this is what this really explains is the effect that we've had with the current market conditions. I think we're all aware that inflation has significantly accelerated over the last few years, and so we outlined this to show a couple of things. The main point I wanted to speak to is that currently with the forecast, proposed FF&E and proposed AV equipment, we'd be looking at about a $720,000 shortfall. So there's certain decisions that we're going to have to make as we move forward. Some of that can be offset by the contingency that we have inherent in the project already, but we do not have enough contingency to cover that full shortfall as it relates to the overall project. In terms of what would happen if we open without this additional funding is we will have to prioritize what can fit into the project for the budget that we have, because as I stated before, it's our goal that the town does not exceed their budget allotment for this project. We may, with the money that was allocated for FF&E, it's really the amount of money that you would need to buy the necessary switches to allow the network to function in the building for the three departments. It's enough to have the Wi-Fi work in the three departments. You might be able to buy a television or two. Be heavy reuse of the limited resources that they already have within the facility, and you would lose likely all of the remote functionality that had been proposed by the users when we developed the AV budget that we were looking at. In terms of the furniture, we would have to engage the designer to do a full stock of the existing furniture within the building, which largely from what we've looked at already appears to be a mishmash of items that have been available at the time there was a need, so they're not properly sized to the space. One of the focuses of the team has been to develop a building that will maximize the value of the built form, because the built form is the largest percentage by far. If you advance to the next slide, Mark. You can see here that big blue square in the middle there, that's the construction cost. And everything, and the bottom is the designer's fees. So that tiny sliver at the top between 25 and about 29 million, that's how much we have for this other FF&E stuff. You can't go into a room and buy a square foot of building and add it on at the end, but you can buy an extra chair or an extra two chairs. So we definitely focused working with the PBC on making decisions that maximize the building that we delivered for the town. What that leaves us with is needing to prioritize what's available for existing furniture against what we can afford for new furniture. So we may have rooms that have wrong-sized furniture so that they can't work efficiently. We right-sized a lot of the rooms to work with what's called systems furniture so that we can maximize the efficiency of a smaller square foot because, again, a square foot of building has a much higher cost than a desk or a chair.
Any other questions or comments?
Hi. I'm Susan Berry, 4 Dawson Drive. The FinCom vote was 4-4, and I'm speaking as one of the members on the Finance Committee who voted to recommend approval of Article 22 and 23. In principle, I agree that capital articles need to go through the capital prioritization process. However, I view this request, or both of these requests, Article 22 and 23, less as individual capital projects, but rather in a larger context. At the annual town meeting in September 2020, town meeting voters supported by well over two-thirds the article for $28,832,000 to be expended for the design, permitting, and construction or renovation of a community center. And then a special election upheld the support by a vote of 1,337 to 880, or 60% of the voters voted in favor of the project. At some point in the design process, it became clear that the budget for AV and furniture, fixtures, and equipment would not meet the needs of the three user groups, SPS, the senior center, and Park and Rec, as well as the emergency shelter. Given that the voters had shown the Fairbank Community Center to be a priority, I believe it is reasonable for members of the select board or the town administration to propose using free cash to supplement the original budget for these items. Article 22 and 23 allow the voters to decide if they agree to using free cash to supplement the original AV and FF&E budgets to more closely meet the needs. Since I believe the earlier votes indicated that the majority of the town is in favor of the Fairbank Community Center, making it a priority, and that Article 22 addresses what would otherwise be unmet AV needs for the center, and Article 23 addresses what would be unmet needs for furniture and equipment, I voted to recommend approval of these articles and will vote in favor of Article 22 and 23. Thank you.
If you could pass the microphone to the gentleman in the front of the hat, please. And if you, sir, you could stand up, please.
My name is Donald Sherman at 42 Rainer Road. For the past 3 years, I have been, over 2 years now, I have been the moderator for a Sudbury Senior Center program that I have run on Zoom and have found it extremely valuable to have the facility to support seniors both at the senior center and at home. In addition, I had the opportunity to help a different group that I'm a member of try to set up a hybrid meeting where we not only ran Zoom for the people at home, but we ran Zoom for those who cared to attend. I would like to assure you that the equipment needs to do that properly are quite extraordinary. We are not looking for Cadillac for the senior center. We're looking for the ability to properly serve the seniors in the community in a way we could not have imagined when this project began. I feel these requests are highly justifiable and urge everyone to vote for it.
If the Girl Scouts could pass it towards the back center, please. And, sir, if you could just stand up as they're passing the microphone to you.
Kevin Portelli, 188 Willis Road. A question I have is, do we understand the operating expenses for these systems? Like, do we have the resources to support them during their lifespan? Do we know what the lifespan is going to be? Has that been factored in?
You can answer that question, Mr. Eberle, that would be appreciated.
We have done analyses to see where the systems will be. The Fairbanks Center is largely an electrified building so that it can be offset by photovoltaics. There's been discussions with both the Energy Committee and the recently departed facilities manager for the town about ways in which that photovoltaic could move forward. That will help to offset what would be the largest utility bill of the facility. Later on in the evening, I think you're going to look at an article that relates to the water usage and the pool equipment in the Fairbanks Center as well, which would also contribute to the utility costs of that building. But largely, the utility cost is electric with the intention of offsetting it with photovoltaics.
Is there anybody in the balcony who wishes to be heard? Okay. In the back right, please.
Okay. I have a couple questions.
Name and address, please.
Oh, yes. I'm Linda Faust. I'm at 189 Boston Post Road. I don't know if I missed something. First of all, it's going to take a couple of years for the center to be built. So, I mean, is there time to have this proposition come up later? Are we taking a chance that there'll be even less funding available? And the second thing is, I just want to emphasize how important I think the Zoom is, along with equipment. Assistive listening devices, and for people like myself, I'm wearing one now. So would you help me enlighten me on my question, please, about the about this, because I'm all for this, but I'm a little bit confused, so I asked the question about is this something we can address later, before the center's built, or is this something we should move on now?
Mr. Eberle, could you address the issue of timing?
So currently the center is scheduled to have a soft open likely in September of 23. The full center with all construction complete, including the site construction, will likely be at the end of 2023. We have looked at the calendar as it relates to the timing of these purchases, and what we have found is that the food service equipment component of it has a definite longer lead time in terms of the time it takes to order and manufacture that equipment, as well as the time at which it needs to be installed in the sequence with construction. So that we would need to begin planning and development under what's called a Massachusetts General Laws Chapter 30B procurement process. And we would likely need to engage in that this summer. So having definition of the budget that's available to make those prioritized choices is certainly helpful if it can be decided at this town meeting. In terms of the furniture and the AV, there is a shorter lead time currently, but we are seeing a significant fluctuation in terms of the overall lead time of both, of pretty much everything. I think we've all seen it at the grocery store with things that you used to have great selection, and now it's withered down, and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. The same is true of products that go into buildings just as well. So having the uncertainty of that time or that manufacturing time puts us in the position where it would be better for the project team to plan and prioritize to have this cost certainty now, knowing that we will not be purchasing this equipment and paying for this equipment until the latter half of 2023. Whereas if we delay this until, say, a fall town meeting, which I don't believe is a certainty, we would be in the situation of having to potentially come up with a plan B of how we reuse existing, and that may lead to additional design fees. So if we punt it beyond that, beyond a fall town meeting, I think we face the reality that we may have to open with only what we have now, and we may not be able to deliver a center on day one that has all of the needs that the community is looking for in this center that they authorized.
Yes, in the middle here, please, one of the Girl Scouts. If you could just stand up, sir.
Thanks. Yes, Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. Just a quick question about free cash. We have had other items that have hit free cash so far, and there are more slotted to hit free cash. I just wondered if somebody could answer where this would be with the next two articles in our free cash position and what we would hope to end up with after town meeting.
Town Manager Hayes?
Okay, as it relates to free cash, the free cash estimate and projection did take account for these two items. Does that help answer your question?
Do you have a number? Sorry.
So I'll turn it over to Dennis Cahane in the event that he ran numbers differently than the chart that I have in front of me.
Mr. Cahane?
Finance Director.
Dennis Cohen, Finance Director. So if all the articles pass that we have remaining, it will be $1,373,600 left over.
Okay. At this point, I am going, unless anybody has a burning question, and remember, this is AV equipment. We've got to move on to furniture, which is a different article. I'd like to call. This will be the last comment in the balcony, please. The mic's not on. Try
thank
talking
you,
to it again.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Is that coming? Okay,
yes.
Great. Thank you, Madam Moderator. And before I start, just a little point of order.
Your name and address, please.
Kathleen K. Bell, 348 Old Lancaster Road. It's very hard to get your attention in the balcony, so I'm just asking, please, could you look up here more often?
I will.
Thank you. Okay. I am speaking on behalf of the Commission on Disability. I don't want to rehash what other people have said about the value of the AV equipment. I'm addressing the AV equipment, Article 22, because generally it's known. But I would like to just point out that the pandemic really played two parts in making this article so important. I mean, we've had a pandemic. It wasn't expected. The impacts of it wasn't expected. But by crashing the supply chain, it certainly sent the costs through the roof. That was not predictable. So I would appreciate a sense of nimble adjustability here in terms of free cash usage, and the pandemic taught all of us how important our connectivity is through technology. But for people with disabilities who couldn't even participate before, they've discovered that remote option is really, really helpful to their lives and enhancing their ability to participate in the community in ways that they weren't able to do before. So The Commission on Disability voted unanimously in favor of recommending passage of Article 22. Thank you.
So the quantum of vote required for passage of Article 22 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Anyone opposed, please raise your cards. Oh, you can put your cards down. We're just checking on the black box. That passes by more than majority. Article 23, motion by Chair Roberts. No, I'll wait for her to get up.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $200,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Select Board Member Drettler.
Good evening, Janie Drettler, member of the Select Board. First, if I may, I would like to thank Beth Sudmeyer, my deepest gratitude, and I hope from the community for all of your work on the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. Okay, Article 23, Fairbank Community Center, Furniture, Fixtures, Equipment, Funding, FF&E. To see if the town will vote to raise and appropriate or to transfer from available funds the sum of $200,000 or any other sum or sums to be expended upon the direction of the town manager for the purpose of purchasing any one or more of the furniture, fixtures, and equipment categories for the Fairbank Community Center project to address needs and budget challenges or to act on anything relative thereto. The Select Board report is the challenges associated with the global pandemic and its impact on the material costs and labor forces have caused an increased cost in some of the items associated with the Fairbank Community Center project. This request is submitted to meet the needs of the project, including, but not limited to, commercial kitchen equipment and kitchen wares to address requirements for emergency shelter operation. The associated purchases will enhance the level of service to the patrons of the Fairbank Community Center and the town emergency shelter. What is furniture, fixtures, and equipment, FF&E? Commercial kitchen equipment, including walk-in refrigerator and freezer, dishwashing station, commercial stove and oven, stainless steel food preparation area, commercial kitchen appliances such as coffee maker, mixer, etc. Other uninstalled furniture and equipment, washer dryer, refrigerators, office break room equipment, whiteboards, and etc. What is the budget status? The cost of FF&E has increased at a higher rate due to the pandemic. The feasibility study did not differentiate between a teaching kitchen, like a residential kitchen, and a commercial kitchen needed for the emergency shelter needs. The feasibility study assumed significant reuse of existing furniture and equipment. Subsequent survey indicated reuse of most of these items was not appropriate in this new facility. The feasibility study did not indicate any separate cost for technology and security. Rolled into the FF&E budget as equipment, this left an inadequate budget for furnishing the entire building. What is the need? A commercial kitchen for emergency shelter. The kitchen will also be used by the senior center and other user groups and general public. Furniture to outfit offices and programming spaces. What is the ask? $200,000 from free cash for commercial kitchen equipment or other FF&E. We obtained direct feedback from user groups on the commercial kitchen use. We spoke to the director for the Council on Aging and the senior center, as well as Chief Whalen of our fire department. Having the ability to prepare meals on site is the most efficient and cost-effective method to provide for our residents with meals on a large scale. Since the new shelter and kitchen area will have 100% emergency backup power, we will have the ability to provide the service with a proper kitchen equipment installed. Sudbury Senior Center will use a new kitchen to provide a hot lunch each weekday for 40 to 60 participants. A part-time chef with the assistance of volunteer assistants will create hot, nutritious meals using the kitchen's commercial equipment. The kitchen will also provide a continental breakfast and hot coffee tea every morning for serving in the multi-purpose lunch area or the cafe across the corridor. The kitchen and all the equipment in it will be in use from the day the new center opens. We also spoke to Dennis Minone, our Park and Recreation Department Director. He said that the Park and Recreation Department will use the kitchen for community programs, which will include serving food and culinary classes for kids, youth, and adults. So we obtained some pictures from other commercial kitchens in other locations. We can see the larger picture is the Cohasset Senior Center kitchen, which has stainless steel countertops and shelving and a large range, also an overhead. I don't have one of those in my house. That would be really nice to have. I don't have enough room. The small picture on the top is the Falmouth Senior Center teaching kitchen outfitted with commercial kitchen, with kitchen equipment. And then the lower picture is the Sharon Community Center kitchen, with also with freezers and dishwashers. This is a slide that shows the progression or the history of the technology, the FF&E technology and security budget history. The first column is a feasibility study that was done in November of 2019, which allocated $375,000 for technology, security, FF&E, and the kitchen equipment. It progressed through the planning process to April of 2021, which was the project start. And it was identified that there was a need for $50,000 for technology, $75,000 for security, and $375,000 for FF&E, including kitchen equipment. Move forward another year, the forecast has identified $89,000 for technology, $55,000 for security, FF&E, which is all the items below it, for $562,500, and then kitchen equipment, which is what we're really here talking about tonight, plus some other items, is $196,060. So as you can see, there's a shortfall in the budget for these items. And I will leave any questions to our terrific staff and our project manager. Thank you.
Does the Finance Committee have a report?
Similarly, the Finance Committee voted to not approve this article by a vote of 4-4, noting that FF&E was included in the original Article 18 passed at town meeting 2020, and that this would cause this project to advance before other prioritized projects already included in the capital improvement plan.
Does the select board have a report? Oh, I'm just asking for the vote, and then I will... Oh, I thought a turn.
Yeah, the select board supports this article 3-2.
Okay. Is there a minority report?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Moderator. Dan Carty, select board. So this article, similar to the last one, really has little to do with furniture, fixtures, or equipment. As we've heard in the various presentations tonight, it's simply a cost overrun on a $28.8 million project. Now, running over budget really shouldn't be all that surprising, given we're embarking on a major, major construction project during a pandemic, where we know supply chain issues are prevalent and the economy in general has been negatively impacted. But as for the FF&E being separated out, these are not add-on items. I'd ask people to revisit Article 18 from town meeting 2020, where these items were specifically called out as being paid for in the original $28.8 million. Okay? So, again, we're really not being asked to purchase FF&E. What we're really being asked to do is pick up the slack on an over-budget project. And that's okay. Right? Let's just call it what it is. So that said, there's a right way of doing things and a wrong way. And the right way should have been to follow what we just laid out as new financial policies for our town. And in reading our policies, it's clear to me that we should be financing this project and these overage with debt as a whole and not segmenting them out and not free cash. So certainly financing with debt, this comes with a more stringent approval of 2/3. Rather than the simple majority that's being asked for here with the use of free cash. So, you know, I will note these are financial policies. They're not laws. But we as a board should, at a minimum, state that we're making an exception to our own policies at one of the very first opportunities we've had to execute them. Thank you.
CIAC for a report. In the back middle, please.
CIAC
Susan Asbetti and Chaffee, CIAC Chair. The CIAC supports this article.
I'm going to open Article 23 for discussion, but some of the questions that were asked with Article 22 addressed by Mr. Eberle addressed the issue of FF&E. So if there's any other questions that were not already asked or any positions that people wanted to make in the middle here, please.
Ray Phillips, 40 West Spring Pine Road. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the speaker said that he was at present projecting a $700,000 overrun that might be made up during the course of the project. Could you clarify that? I have a second question.
Mr. Eberle?
Sure. Could you put it back on this? I think it's the previous presentation, but it's the fourth from the last slide.
Just make sure when you answer the question, you're speaking into the microphone.
So you can see here the black line indicates the project budget on this chart. So the chart, it's actually a much longer line. It starts at $25 million. So what this shows is twofold. We have a $720,000 overage right now. Included within that is contingency. Some of the additional funding that's already been voted on, and if this funding were voted on, would make up some of that deficit. Some of that deficit would also be covered by contingency to help reconcile it and bring it back. It's one of those things that's difficult to represent in chart form. But we wanted to sort of lay out the problem. This is not our current budget. This is our current budget amounts and the excess that's forecast currently. And one of the reasons for that excess, you can see in the first three lines. So the original feasibility study assumed that by June of 2021, we would be entering construction in the town of Sudbury. As you know, the project didn't actually start moving until April of 21, and we're currently looking at a start date of construction this month. We'll be getting bids from the contractor on Monday. We'll have an understanding of what the total construction cost is. It'll allow us to move forward. There's a cost to delay, and in the construction industry, we track that with what's called escalation. You'll assign escalation to a study, such as a feasibility study, so that you understand what it costs today, but also a projection of what it will cost in the future. The projection to June of 2021 assumed that it would be 2.17% that the cost would grow, and so they put about $600,000 on top of the budget. In actuality, what it ended up being is 6.6%, and there's a significant difference in that cost, which we've tried to represent in this chart. You can see that we would be over $30 million if they had forecast the 6.6% that we're showing in this chart. In reality, we kept going because we didn't start to be ready to do construction in June 2021. We're a year later. So if you forecast from the original date of that feasibility study budget in March of 2020 to today, we'd actually be looking at 10.5% of actual construction escalation. And that's a significant overage. We'd be north of $31 million. In reality, the project that we're proposing today has pared that back significantly. So we're actually looking at 1.5 under where escalation would put us today. And that's been by targeted decisions to right-size the building. It's been trying to scale back things. But we also want to outfit this building with, we don't want to go to Staples and buy the town furniture. We want to go to a commercial furniture vendor that's going to have extended warranties on that furniture, that's going to stand behind their product, so that we're delivering something that is has the longevity that you would expect in a commercial building that's very high use such as this. The town doesn't want to revisit this project in 3 to 5 years when the cheap furniture that starts breaking or when the reused furniture starts breaking. They want to provide something now that's going to have the longevity that you would expect from a commercial project such as this.
And if you had one more question, you can make that now. Just talk into it.
I can. Thank you. So my second question is, I believe that some of the cost overruns have something to do with the pandemic, I believe. It's up on the slide. It's my understanding that the town of Sudbury did receive some federal money. I'm not sure how much. I'm sure somebody up there knows what it is. Was it considered, or has been considered, to use those funds to offset these costs rather than take them from free cash.
So I believe you're referring to the ARPA funds, and I would refer that question to Town Manager Hayes.
Okay, so the town manager, Henry Hayes, the town did receive an allocation of ARPA funds, and so there was also an opportunity along the way to have discussion with the select board and make recommendations as to potential uses. There have been a few decisions made on that, and there are more decisions to be made. I will not speak on behalf of the select board.
Chair Roberts.
So the town received $5.9 million in ARPA funds, and we did allocate $400,000 in ARPA funds towards an unknown and sound water main on the Fairbank project. So we've been working with the Sudbury Water District on that, so it wouldn't impact the overall budget of this project. It did fall within lines of the original ARPA requirements, which was water infrastructure, so we felt that was appropriate at the time. So that's an example of use of ARPA funds towards controlling this budget, but we felt that this was an appropriate ask from free cash.
Anybody else on Article 23? Anybody in the balcony? Okay. Ms. Rapinion in the middle.
Kirsten Rapinion, 45 Harness Lane. I guess this is similar to the last article, except that if the select board is sort of relative to your financial policies is issuing sort of a mea culpa, saying this is an extraordinary exception to the financial policies, is that something that you had discussed as far as making an exception to the financial policies? As you had mentioned, Mr. Carty. Also, the concern that I have, again, is that if we don't act this evening and we don't make this this right, are we going to be coming back to a fall town meeting or a spring town meeting? And we all know that the costs are going up exponentially. We are in a, inflation and supply chain, as people have said all along. And everything goes up, pencils, papers, gasoline, wood, everything that we're sitting here in front of tonight is going to increase. And I worry that we're going to have a product that is not going to be helpful to have as a community center. And the people that are underrepresented here tonight will not be the recipients of a work product that we can be proud of. Rather, we will be doing retroactive purchasing, and I don't think that's a healthy idea, so I would recommend support of this article. Thank you.
Chair Roberts, would you like to address the first question?
First of all, I'll just highlight that the new financial policies were approved. I believe it was the end of January, and these articles were formulated before they were approved. Of course, we always, however, have a capital planning process. This really fell in between the time of when the traditional capital planning process was done and before those financial policies were done. So it really had to happen right then and there. And as I personally stated earlier, I think this in itself is one big capital project.
Was there somebody in the back middle who had their card up, please, if one of the Girl Scouts could bring their microphone there?
So I understand, Steve Lanzendorf, 43 Hawes Road. I understand that the impact of the pandemic, inflation is much higher than we anticipated. Your graph showed 6% versus the forecasted 2%. But these aren't we're not talking in these articles about 6% versus 2%. We're talking, in the case of technology, about an actual need that was six or seven times higher than the feasibility study. In the case of the furniture for the FFE 2 to 3 times higher. This is not 6 versus 2%. These are gross misestimates, and I can't help but wonder what other surprises we have waiting for us at the next town meeting. And my question to the select board is, do we have appropriate supervision of this project?
Chair Roberts?
Yes, we have an exceptional team working on this project. Despite the many challenges that they faced, they've made very difficult value engineering decisions to keep this project as close to the original budget as possible. As stated in my earlier presentation, impacts to the project were primarily in materials or square footage, but a lot of effort was taken not to affect the programming and main functionality of the building at all. So I'm highly, highly confident in the team that's managing this project, both the hired team and the permanent building committee.
Ms. Nam on my left. Girl Scouts, if you could just bring the microphone right over there, right next to you.
Hi. Could I just follow up? Could you bring up your bar graph again?
Mr. Eberle.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Mr. Thompson.
And what where on this are you saying that the which one of these bars represents what we voted for in town meeting?
So what you voted for in town meeting is
if you could just speak into the microphone because the people at home can't hear unless it's in the microphone. Thank you.
What you voted for on town meeting is the first bar that's shown in this graph. So the feasibility study was prepared prior to our participation in the project by a separate firm, and when we were brought in April, we inherited the values that they had set. So this first bar is the yellow would be the direct cost, the actual estimates of what they thought it would cost in March of 2020, and the gray bar above that would be the escalation that they applied as a percentage to that cost. So they applied 2% to that yellow bar, which, again, like the previous chart, this starts at $25 million. So there's $25 million worth of yellow bar below this. So that's why the 2% is such a small amount. But you can see that if they had applied the 6.6% that had actually occurred, which we're not soothsayers, we can't speak to what the future will actually hold, but had they applied a 6.6% escalation, which was more appropriate to what actually happened, they would have been another $1 million when they went to town meeting with that ask, or they would have cut more scope out of the project.
I see. So could I ask you a question about your opinion? Do you think the fact that we asked for both design funds and construction funds in one giant article, as opposed to the standard previous way of asking first for design funds, then getting a better estimate and a better timeline, and then asking for construction funds, do you think that the fact that we asked for the huge chunk together was a contributing factor to being so grossly off in the estimates?
Mr. Eberle, if you can answer that question, if you're able.
Yes. Could you go to the last slide, Mark? So this is the history of the project while we were involved. And I speak to this, trying to answer your question, but it's going to be a little bit of a roundabout way to get there. There are two ways to do it. You can go and you can pursue the design costs and then estimate it and then bring it to town meeting. The MSBA has a similar program where they'll take the design up to a certain point and they'll then go to the town and have you vote. I think the town's participated in the MSBA's program before for school building. And so you'll develop a schematic design essentially of your building, and then you might authorize a construction or design up to a certain point, and then you'll come back to get the remainder of the design and construction costs. That is a valid way to pursue it. In this case, the town pursued a feasibility study approach, and what a feasibility study does is it takes a program, it takes a schedule, and it figures out a prototypical building in order to build a budget for an overall building. By using that approach, you typically yield a budget that you will work to, and that's what we inherited with this project. It's a perfectly valid way to move forward with a project, but it does expose you to inflationary factors, which, if we go back in time to 2020, was not the concern that it is today. It has hit hard and suddenly and caught a lot of people unexpectedly. Knowing that, we have looked at every stage of the project to cut things back. And what this chart shows you is the degree to which we've looked with the PVC about the various ways that we can keep the project within budget. This only represents the design construction costs, but you can see that when we got our first schematic estimate, we were north of $25 million for just the construction costs versus our $23 million construction budget. We looked at over $3 million in potential savings with the PVC, and ultimately the PVC voted to accept a little over $2 million of those savings to keep us at that $23 million budget, more or less. When we moved to design development, we were much closer in line. We were about $23 million. We looked at value engineering again to bring it back in line. We looked at using a little bit of the construction contingency that we talked about, or the owner's contingency that we talked about earlier, to find the right size budget for the project, because when you do a feasibility first, that contingency is there to help you to find the healthy balance for that construction cost. We were able to bring the construction back in line with that $23,171,000 with a small infusion of that contingency within the project. When we moved to construction documents, we had several conversations with various groups within the town that had an interest in contributing to the project for certain reasons. The Friends of the Senior Center, for instance, contributed a significant amount of money because they wanted some scope items that had not passed the VE bar. So that private funding was donated to the town in support of those. We had the ARPA funds as it relates to the water main that the town manager mentioned, which contributed to that as well. And the Energy Committee proposed certain modifications to the building to lower the overall energy costs of the building through certain improvements, which they funded through their, I don't know what the right term for it is, it's the discretionary fund that comes from the solar panels. So you can see that with that green infusion of cash, we upped the budget up to $23,479,000 for construction. But without that, we're relatively in line with where the construction costs were forecast early on. There's been a great deal of attention to keeping this project within budget and making sure that we can deliver something that the town can still be proud of, but at the same time delivers on the goals that the project had proposed.
Anybody wish to be heard? Anybody in the balcony? Okay. In the front here, the woman in the glasses, please.
Marie Rock, 26 Whispering Pine. I go to the senior center about three times a week. There's a huge kitchen there, stainless steel end-to-end that runs the length of the gym. And I'm wondering why we need a new one, and if you can address that, and also whether or not, if you're thinking that the kitchen might be too old or whatever, can it be repurposed or refurbished or anything like that? Because sure looks good to me, stainless steel tables, all the things you're talking about before. So thank you.
Mr. Eberle?
Stainless steel is a wonderful material because when done properly, it never changes. And so a lot of those tables and serving lines are original to the school when it was built in the 1950s. And some of you may have attended that school, eaten lunch in that school, and you probably were taking your food out of the same stuff that's there currently. A lot of the equipment that's in there has failed over the years and been replaced with residential grade equipment. The type of kitchen that we're proposing for this would support the 200-plus residents that would potentially need to shelter at the building. And so it's not the same equipment, and it's not quite the same configuration as some of that stainless steel. While stainless steel has maintained its appearance and has excellent cleanability, it doesn't lend itself to modification in a cost-effective way. And so to fit it within the confines that we need for our project would be challenging. We also found that a lot of the kitchen equipment that was currently being used by Meals on Wheels in there is near the end of its useful life. And we found that a lot of the dinners that they serve within the kitchen now are not prepared on site, but are largely catered and just served on site. And so one of the tasks that the fire department presented us with was the ability to serve food that was prepared on site in the event of an emergency, which has a much higher storage component in terms of refrigeration and freezer, and also different kitchen equipment to support the menu for both what the seniors are looking to do in terms of introducing a dining program to serve the town residents, and also what the fire department's looking for in terms of the ability to serve in an emergency the number of people who are sheltering at the building.
I believe there was one more, or two more, and then we will move on to a vote. So if you could start with the lady, please.
Hi, Stacy Morano, 592 North Road. Two things. You just mentioned a school, and I thought we were talking about the community center. So it is an old school building?
Yeah. It's
okay, thanks.
But prior to building the pool, it was, I think, an elementary school.
Okay. And then we've used ARPA funds. We've just given $300,000 for Zoom and projectors. You want $200,000 for furniture and equipment. Is this line priced out so that we know no additional funds are going to be needed beyond this?
Mr. Eberle? If you can answer that question.
I don't know that I can't make a commitment that there won't be additional funds. We're getting bids on Monday, and we're optimistic that those bids will be in line with the construction estimate. But again, I can't predict the future. I would be an excellent project manager if I could predict the future. I can say that in Massachusetts, you get filed sub-bids, which are certain trades that bid in advance of a general bid. And those bids have come in line. In total, they've come in line with the budget projections. So we're optimistic that when we get the general bids on Monday, they'll remain in line. We will design to the budget that we have. So ultimately, we will spend the money that is allocated for the project from Compass's perspective. We'll spend the money that is allocated towards the project to meet the needs. And if there's money left over at the end, we return it to the town. We have a track record of doing that successfully. If other groups than myself want to comment on whether or not they would seek other funds, I'll give them the opportunity. But from our perspective, this was not our ask. It was generated by the select board members. And we do feel it fills a need within the current project as it was originally voted on by the town. But I can't comment as to whether or not there will be outside factors that influence whether or not there's additional need.
I'm just wondering how we can know it's going to fill the needs when it hasn't been line itemed out. We're giving buckets of money to generalized funds, and we're building beyond the budget
The finance committee was given a line item budget for the furniture. That was produced by us, or by the architect, and given to the finance committee as a letter when they voted on the project. So we do have a line item furniture schedule for each of the three user groups within the building. That does exist.
But we haven't received the bids yet,
correct?
Right? So we're funding it before we get the bid. So we're not entirely sure that this will meet our needs. Is that correct?
We are funding it before the bids.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And if you could just hand the microphone in the row in front of you, and that will be the final comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. After the last discussion, I surrender my time back to the moderator.
Okay. The quantum of vote required for passage is majority for Article 23. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Thank you. You can put your cards down. That passes by more than majority. Article 24, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $995,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Assistant Fire Chief Tim Choate.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Good evening. My name is Tim Choate. I'm the Assistant Fire Chief, and I'm here to discuss the construction of the Station 2 project on Route 20. Station 2 is located at 550 Boston Post Road in front of Whole Foods. It is currently staffed by one firefighter and one lieutenant. As you see in the chart right here, in 2017, when the plans for building the fire station first started, you'll see the layout throughout the town of the South, North, and West districts. As to the call volume, as you will see, majority of the call volume in the town of Sudbury for emergency responses for the fire department is on the south side of town. And a large part of that is medical emergencies. Currently, the two ambulances we staff are staffed at our headquarters fire station in the center of town on Hudson Road. What we're looking for is to have the expansion of the housing quarters of Station 2 built, so we can transfer one ambulance and two firefighters per shift down to Station 2 to provide a paramedic-based ambulance service on the south side of town. Doing such will significantly increase the response time of getting paramedic service at ALS Care to the south side of town, as well as provide a much greater working environment for the firefighters. The project has been worked on diligently by the fire department, the town, as well as the permanent building committee and the architectural firm to make it lean and as efficient as possible. The original plan was to construct the station with concrete blocks and steel framing with a pitched roof, and to be economically feasible and keep it within the budget, they've reduced it down to having a wood frame building with brick veneer and a flat roof. So we worked very hard to keep this within the budget for the town. This is the architect's rendering drawing. This would be if you were standing near the west entrance to Whole Foods. The pitch building right over here with the pitch roof on it and the two overhead doors, that's the existing fire station. What the plan is to create a housing quarters to the west of it and create a connection between the two buildings. And here you'll see in this picture what the proposed layout is going to be. Right now, this is the existing fire station. This is the office area. This is the living quarters, where essentially they have two chairs, a small stove, and a microwave, and a small refrigerator, small bunk room, bathroom, and this is the area where the apparatus is stored and where the equipment is stored. This is Article 24 right here, with the creation of the living quarters for the fire department. They walk through the front door. You'll have your office area for the officer. We'll have a first aid room, which will be very beneficial. Quite often, residents of Sudbury will come in and ask to have the blood pressure check. What we have to do is sit them on the bumper at the fire station and do the blood pressure check there. Last summer, we had an incident where a person who was very sick came into the fire station and collapsed on the floor, and we had to work on the patient on the floor in the fire station. So what we can do right here is bring the person through the front door, bring them right into a first aid room, similar to what you find in the nurse's room inside a school. And then we'll have the watch area where the communications equipment and the computers will be. This front area here will be public, so if a family member needs to come in and use a family restroom, they can do such. And here's the living quarters with the bunk rooms, the kitchen, the day room, fitness room, and mechanical rooms. This will be attached to the existing fire station by this connector point right here. We've just listened to two articles discussed about the cost overruns of construction due to inflation and the increased construction costs. The Castle Booze Associates put together a plan for pricing in 2/1/21, and it came in at the cost right here. The most recent estimate provided to us is April 28th, and you'll see where it came down to right here with the increase of cost of construction, resulting in a need for an additional $994,775 for the construction project. As noted, the original funding for this living quarters for the fire station was appropriated in the FY21 calendar year for $4.3 million, where $500,000 came from the sale of the former police station on Boston Post Road, $500,000 free cash, and $3.3 million from the debt levy. The ask tonight for is the additional appropriation. What did I just do, Mark? Now I did it. There we go. What we're asking for is additional free cash of $995,000 to complete the project. As stated before, this is not an appropriation where we're going to be going out asking for debt exclusion and so forth. This is transfer of money that's already there from free cash. Any questions?
Does the Finance Committee have a report?
Finance Committee recommends approval by a vote of 7-1.
Does the Select Board have a report?
The Select Board supports this article 5-0.
We have a report from CIAC in the center middle, please.
The CIAC supports this article.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 24? Can we start with the woman in the pink, please, in the back?
Mary Ann Bittner, 333 Peckham Road. I'd like to know why the building design was changed from a peaked roof to a flat roof. In the state where we have a lot of snow, and if there are residents here who live with a flat roof, I'd like to hear what their comments are.
Oh, sure. One of the Girl Scouts could bring the, somebody from the Permanent Building Committee.
Oh, was it you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Craig Blake from the Permanent Building Committee. The roof outline was changed to a flat roof, and we call it a flat roof. It's actually a sloped flat roof, so that any precipitation will, in fact, drain off it. It was done for a cost savings measure. It's cheaper, less expensive to construct the flat roof than it was the sloped roof.
Okay. And we'll just pass the microphone to the gentleman in front of you.
Hello. Oh, my name's Nathaniel Fribben, 25 Christopher Lane, Sudbury. Living there since 1963. My mother actually has been living there. We have a flat roof angled, and when it was built, the house was one of these unusual type of homes that was flat roofing, you know, big, wide, cubist house style and all that stuff. You know, we never had an issue with it. I mean, the roofing lasted for 50 years, the tar and gravel, until I ripped it off 3 years ago. I replaced it with 3-inch thick insulation, put rubber on it. I got my solar panels on the house. You can't see anything on the solar panels. And I have to say, the roof, we had snow, we've had this, we've had that, and the house has been out of stucco, concrete, and kind of similar to some of the buildings, you know, the town uses for their facilities. We never had a problem. So I don't know why, and he's right. It's cheaper, and it's easier, and you can put solar panels, and no one can see them.
Anybody in the balcony wish to be heard?
It's true, ma'am.
Okay, I think, was there somebody in the back center who also wanted to be heard? Okay, anybody in the back box? Okay. The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 24 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Thank you. You can raise. Okay. That passes by well more than majority. Article 25, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Clerk.
Beth Klein, town clerk. I promise this will be short. This is Article 25. This is to enable electronic voting bylaw amendment. This warrant article seeks to amend the Town of Sudbury general bylaws by expanding the methods of voting at town meeting to include electronic voting. The town bylaws do not specify a method of voting. This has been left up to the moderator and tradition. In order to change how votes are counted, the moderator would need to get the permission of the hall at each annual special town meeting. This bylaw would allow the moderator to default to electronic voting for future town meetings. Electronic voting technology is defined as any electronic voting system which allows for the counting of votes using a wireless or mobile device, including handheld clickers, mobile phone application, or the like. This bylaw would also create a mechanism by which voters could object to the method of voting or notify the moderator that their vote was recorded in error. It will also provide alternative voting options if electronic voting is not available. Thank you.
Does the Finance Committee have a position?
Does not.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 25? Okay, in the center here, please, one of the Girl Scouts. Sir, if you could just stand up so they could see you. In the middle here.
My name is Timothy Coyne. I live at 9 Howell Road in Sudbury. I urge rejection of this article because of the introduction of complexity to something that is already complex enough. Thank you.
Okay, and was there somebody in the middle here?
Yep.
Thank you. Stacey Morano, 592 North Road. Would this allow us to vote remotely from home if it were electronic, or would you still be required to be present in the auditorium?
Ms. Klein?
No, it would not allow for remote voting. That's not allowed by the Secretary of State yet.
Okay, so it would just be electronic, but we would all still be in the same room?
Correct.
Okay, thanks. Yes. Okay.
Anybody else on Article 25? Okay, there's somebody in the balcony. Center of the balcony.
Larry Hubert, 62 Moore Road. The wording of the article aside, what determines the security of such a system and by what criteria is something chosen where we can be assured that things are secure? The history of mobile voting is just abysmal. All sorts of vulnerabilities have been found by security researchers. I wouldn't have a lot of trust in it myself. So if you could speak to how this decision gets made to go to this, if it's chosen, that would be very helpful.
Ms. Klein?
So I understand your concerns. And right now, most of the systems that are being used in Massachusetts do not use Wi-Fi. So that they wouldn't be able to be hacked. All I can say is over 90 towns in Massachusetts are now using electronic voting at town meeting, so that hasn't been an issue. But I can't speak to the I cannot speak in more detail because I just don't have that information. All I know is that it doesn't have Wi-Fi. I believe. So it's not connected to the internet.
And then there was a person over here in the front to my left.
Eva Friedman, 25 Christopher Lane. I'm a little concerned about this because not everybody uses electronic equipment comfortably. And there are a lot of older people who come to town meeting. I myself, I have a cell phone, but frankly, I use only landlines and I work professionally. So, you know, I can imagine that this might limit some people, that they feel that they can't really freely vote. And it complicates things. It adds another layer of complexity, which I think discourages people from voting rather than making it easier. Because I figure once you have electronic voting, then what are you going to do? Mix those votes, sort of a hybrid, with those people who raise their cards and those who vote electronically? It's unclear to me. And I think it is a... I'm opposed to things that make it more difficult to vote rather than easier.
Ms. Klein?
So what this article does is just enlarge the types of voting that we can have at town meeting. It's not saying that we have to have electronic voting. It's also saying that if people object to it, there is a method of voting for a different type of voting. So this is just an article that would open up the town to be able to town meeting to be able to use different ways of voting. It's still going to be up to you to determine if you want to have electronic voting at town meeting. And it would be, I think as people have seen, town meeting goes on for quite a ways now. But I think this is something that might be something that once people try, they might like it. But in any respect, this article is just amending the bylaw to include different types of voting.
In the front center here, please.
Jan Hartberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. One of the methods of voting you're proposing adding is a secret ballot, and I'm wondering how that would work at town meeting.
Ms. Klein?
It would sort of work the same as at an election. You vote at an election, and you know nobody knows what you're voting, and it would be the same here. Would it take much of the process, you mean? Oh, no. I mean, everybody would receive a clicker. And on the clicker, you know, you once the moderator asks for a vote, you would press 1, 2, or 3. And then it would automatically show up on the screen. And that would be it.
Hold on. Can we just get you a microphone?
The use of the secret ballot is not tied to the use of the clickers. It says, whereby counting by raised hands, raised placards, other indication of vote, or secret ballot, or otherwise.
Right. No, that's just another way of voting. The secret ballot is just another way. It's not the same as electronic voting. Secret ballot is just having... Basically, everybody gets a yes or no, and they put it in a box, and then we count it. It's a way they used to do it a while ago.
I don't see how that could possibly work, and I would see that would be open to fraud easily. I mean, I wish I had made an amendment before making a comment. Thank you.
So I'm going to kind of move around the audience. If we could just go in the center to... Straight in front of me, actually.
Thank you.
Billman and Scalico, 126 Hemlock Road. Having been coming to town meeting for many decades and having to suffer through close votes that had to be counted and recounted and recounted, and finally, you know, with tellers, I could see some real advantages to this for getting an accurate vote and not depending upon forcing the moderator to be a real good counter.
Okay, was there somebody along the side here? I'm sorry, in the front here. I'm going to move around the back.
Marie Rock, 26 Whispering Pine. I'm just wondering if you have any information on how much a system like a clicker system has cost other towns, and do you have any information on that?
Ms. Klein?
So in the capital budget that we voted on yesterday, there was an amount for electronic voting, and that's the amount that so there's an amount of about $23,000 for the whole system and for the purchase of the clickers. And that would be, and there's no software costs, that would be it.
Okay, and then there was a, I believe there's a woman on the aisle there in red.
Hi, Nancy Brumbach at 36 Canterbury Drive. I want to second that this would be infinitely more accurate than having the moderator look around and visually count. We would know instantly what the vote was, and it would remove any questions. And if you've ever sat through a 10:30 standing vote count, you will appreciate this. Acton and Whalen both use these and love it.
Okay, and then Ms. Tupta in the very back with the blue. Oh, she's changed her mind. Okay, I think there was somebody in the back. Anybody back there that wanted to talk? Okay, we'll go to you, Mr. Matthews.
Okay. Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. I second the feeling about the close votes. In fact, I've sat through a couple of close votes that were extremely contentious, and many people left the building not believing that the vote was accurate. And so I think this would be a quick way to dispel that problem. But also I think it would give you a quick idea of quorum. And there has been some nights where I questioned whether there was quorum and the votes went on. And so that would be a good help for the moderator to be able to quickly assess quorum, which I think is an important idea.
Okay. I think it's Ms. Bell in the balcony.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. I'm Kay Bell, 348 Old Lancaster Road, and I'm just speaking for myself. I have a question about the clickers and whether you're knowledgeable whether they'll have raised markings or braille on the clicker for people who are blind or have vision problems.
Ms. Klein?
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you just repeat that again? I have hearing problems. I couldn't hear you.
I'm sorry. I'm asking about whether the clicker will have a raised figure for the yes and the no so that someone who is blind can use tactile to determine the yes or the no that they're pressing.
Right. That's a good question, and I'm not sure. It might, but I can't answer that right now. I'm not positive.
Is there anybody else in the balcony? Okay, in the center, please.
Henry Knorr, 55 Goodman Hill Road. I understand some of the benefits that might come from this, but I think it also raises some additional problems. I mean, what if there's a problem with the system, and what if nobody understands whether all the clickers are working? Is the proposal that we just accept that we get handed a clicker when we come in? Is that the plan? And then And then if someone leaves early, do they leave their clicker at the door, or can they take it outside and possibly vote from outside the meeting?
Ms. Klein?
So I have, I just have to say that I, previous to this, I came from a town who's been using it for the past 5 years, and there are a bunch of checks and balances to make sure that the system is working, is always working. And depending on the system you get, I believe that some of them just won't go. You can't go very far walking outside the building. It won't carry over to into the auditorium. So you couldn't just go outside and vote outside. It just really depends on what the system is, and of how far it carries. What it does do is, if we have three rooms here, we can, somebody who's voting in that room, it will be picked up here, and so their votes will be shown up on the screen with everybody else's votes. That I can tell you.
So I'm going to call the question. Article 25 requires a passage of majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Anyone opposed, please raise your card. Thank you. You can lower your card. That passes by more than majority. Article 26, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $455,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. A presentation by Superintendent Crozier.
Madam Moderator, we would like to submit the previously recorded video for this presentation by the Facilities Director, Bill Barletta.
Sure. Mr. Barletta has retired.
Hello, I'm Bill Barletta, Combined Facilities Director for the Town of Sudbury. And I'm here to present Article 26, Schools HVAC Heating Repairs and Replacements for $455,000. This is a request for the combined repair and replacement of six individual HVAC repairs and replacements, all in several schools. And these items are critical to maintaining required heat and ventilation within the school buildings. These have been determined to bundle together in order to facilitate the undertaking of each of these projects. The first is 31 classroom window air conditioning units at the Noyes School. This seeks funding to install 31 window air conditioning units with all the associated window electrical work for those school classrooms. Over time, the Noyes classrooms have become warmer during the school year. This has been affecting the school's educational mission with air conditioning these classrooms. The classrooms have always been difficult to heat, and it seems to have become more difficult as the warmer season expanded into the school year itself. It's become increasingly unbearable for students and staff. It's also a matter of equity, as the other schools are air conditioned to the major extent. All similar rooms at Haynes, all but two at Loring, and almost half of Nixon have air conditioning by way of window or portable floor units, and the Curtis School is served by rooftop air handling systems. The windows at Noyes are a particular condition, as they're not suitable for conventional window air conditioning installations, as are the other buildings. Hence the need for this type of a project. We've investigated various options for air conditioning and treating the air in those spaces with split units and some other means. The large window units and the retrofitted windows seem to be best in this application and most cost effective. The second item is Curtis Heating Rooftop Unit Number 2 replacement for $95,000. This seeks to replace Curtis School's HRU 2 refrigeration 22 air conditioning unit with a new up-to-date, modern, environmentally friendly R410A refrigerant condensing unit and DX coil. Now, that's a more complex way of describing the unit. This unit conditions the air in this area of the school. This unit is over 21 years old. The average life expectancy is between 15 and 20 years. The unit has been exceeded its useful life. The components are obsolete and unable to be repaired. Also, the refrigerant 22 is now obsolete, very difficult to me to obtain. The R410A refrigerant is more readily available, and it is what is used in the modern units. Curtis RTU number 5 replacement is $75,000. This replaces Curtis rooftop unit 5 with the similar older refrigerant R22 with a unit that uses R410A in the entire unit itself. This is another 21 plus year old unit. Again, the lifespan is approximately 15 to 20 years. It's been extensively repaired, no longer meets the requirements for that space. And again, it uses the obsolete refrigerant 22. The next item is Nixon boiler number 3 heat exchanger, $30,000. The picture on the right illustrates the existing heat exchanger. The heat exchanger is the element within the unit that actually takes the combustion and transmits it to the to create heat. The unit can't function without that. The unit is one of 3 in the school that need to all be functioning at their maximum capacity to heat the building on its coldest days. Right now, the building experiences cool areas in the coldest times, and there's no way to really evenly heat the building. The noise main heating circulating pump replacement is $25,000. The unit pictured on the right is mounted on the sled. It has been repaired over the years and is no longer able to be repaired. This $25,000 replaced that entire unit with all the associated specialty fittings, valves, gauges, and so forth. This is one of the pumps within that system that functions really 24 hours a day during the heating season. Whether the boiler is on or not, it is still circulating warm water through the building to heat the building. The last item is Curtis Univent room 18 replacement for $50,000. This seeks to replace the Curtis School room 148 Univent with, again, a modern refrigerant R410A coolant. This is a heat pump unit. Some of the units in that portion of the building were replaced in 2008. This unit was not replaced. It was retrofitted. It's found over the years that it has not been able to meet the heating requirements for that space, especially in the shoulder seasons, which are the spring and the fall heating seasons. Again, a less expensive alternate was undertaken in 2008, and at this point, there's no alternative other than the replacement of that unit.
Do you have anything to add to that?
No, I don't.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a position?
Finance Committee voted 8-0 to approve.
And what is the Select Board's position?
The Select Board supports 5-0.
Could I have a report from CIAC in the center there?
The CIAC recommends passage of this article.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 26? Okay, right there, please.
Ray Phillips, 40, Whispering Pine Road. Do you know if these units would be whether or not credits from MassSave could be used to offset the cost of the unit replacements?
We investigated a lot of different ways to implement the air conditioning units for noise in particular. We found that the window units that we were able to estimate would be best for the square footage would fall within the energy savings
type of unit. I don't know whether Mass Save would apply to these particular projects.
Do you feel it would be worth looking into to see if, in fact, rebates are available to the town?
I'll commit to that.
Okay.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on this article? Balcony? The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 26 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Okay, thank you. Any opposed? Thank you. Article 26 passes unanimously. Article 27, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $130,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Superintendent Crozier.
Again, we'd like to submit the pre-recorded video for this presentation.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Bill Barletta, Combined Facilities Director for the Town of Sudbury. I'm here to present Article Number 27, Noise Classroom Sinks Replacements for $130,000. This article seeks to fund the replacement of the sinks and sink bases in 31 noise classrooms. These sinks and sink bases are original to the 1970 building. The bases are made of wood, and over time they've deteriorated to the point of not being able to be repaired. Being wood and over 50 years old, they've absorbed moisture and they're unable to be properly cleaned and maintained as well. In addition, these existing sinks and bases don't meet current ADA requirements in those classrooms. These non-compliant sinks were identified in the recent townwide ADA self-evaluation and transition plan as a priority one program access barrier. You can see with the photograph on the left, the sink bases have deteriorated. They're no longer needed in the programmatic sense, as all the associated items stored on top and below can either be stored elsewhere. And teachers have found that they prefer that open area for flexible storage. We investigated a few different options of replacement, of repair and replacement of tops and doors and so forth, and found that the units themselves have just too far deteriorated to be repaired. Last year, we undertook a pilot program where we took one of those units, removed it from the concrete block alcove, patched the floor, patched the wall, and replaced it with a standalone, accessible stainless steel sink that meets ADA requirements. Teachers found that they prefer the open space for flexible storage. They have some storage on wheels that they're able to place in that area, so the sacrifice of some of that storage has really not been an issue. We've also, again, had the added benefit of being able to make these universally accessible. This picture was just as the item was completed, so we'll be adding the knee guards below and the dispensers at the appropriate heights. Having done this pilot program, we're able to gain a lot of information on pricing, means and methods, and feel this could be undertaken most expeditiously and economically as one entire project for the 31 classrooms. Thank you.
Do you have anything to add to that? Thank you. Can I have the Finance Committee report?
Finance Committee voted approval 8-0.
Can I have the Select Board report?
The Select Board supports 5-0.
And the CIAC report in the middle there? Girl Scout.
The CIAC supports this article.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 27? Ms. Bell in the back balcony?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. This is Kay Bell. I live at 348 Old Lancaster Road, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Commission on Disability.
The ADA, a civil rights law, requires all government entities, in this case a municipality, to conduct a self-evaluation, that is a thorough inspection and assessment of all facilities, policies, programs, and activities to identify where there are lapses of compliance. After that, they're required to produce a transition plan and work with staff and stakeholders to formulate action steps to implement the plan. For nearly 30 years, Sudbury, like many towns, did not fulfill that requirement. But when Mr. Barletta came to work here as combined facilities director, he saw to it that Sudbury hired a top-notch group to perform the self-evaluation and write us a transition plan. Along with municipal buildings and parks, all Sudbury schools were covered. The total number of items to address in the 5 school buildings is 655. Peter Noyes School has 104 items to remedy. I told you all that to let you know that Article 27 represents an action step to address significant items. Mr. Barletta used an efficient approach to this. He and his staff executed the prototype first to test the design and determine unit cost. Now the town can take advantage of economy of scale to implement the successful design in multiple classrooms. This article proposes to use our tax money efficiently to make a dramatic improvement in accessibility for the children and staff at Peter Noyes Elementary School. The Commission on Disability voted unanimously in favor of recommending passage of Article 27.
Is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this article? The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 27 is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards.
Seven in favor.
Thank you. Article 27 passes by unanimously, actually. Article 29, motion by Chair Roberts.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by resident Pat Brown, please.
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. I've been authorized by the chair of the Sudbury Historic Districts Commission to present on their behalf. I'm not a member of the commission, but they asked me if I could do this. So what I would like to do is to start with a presentation, the pre-recorded presentation, by Fred Taylor, who is chair of the Historic Districts Commission.
Hello, I'm Fred Taylor, a member of the Historic Districts Commission, and I'm here to present Article 29, amend the process for creating new local historic districts. As most of you know, the historic districts in town can be changed. They can be increased in size, decreased in size, and new historic districts can be created. Our bylaws stipulate a process for doing this. This article is about amending that process so that it is more rigorously considered and more time is spent devoted to it. If passed, the Historic Districts Commission, which has no part in the process now, would play a major role. 2 reports, allowing for revisions, would be submitted to the town, and more time would be provided for residents to express their views. In short, the Historic Districts Commission believes this article, if approved, would provide important input and oversight from the parties most directly impacted by proposals for change. If we look at the first slide, we can see the process as it stands now. As you can see, there are just 3 steps. A proposal for change is initiated. A public hearing is held by the planning board, and the planning board makes its recommendations, and the proposal is voted on at town meeting. It is important to note that first, the process can take as little as 2 to 3 weeks. Second, the Historic District Commission plays no role in it. And third, it is possible for the town to require a special town meeting for just a single article of this sort. This can be very costly for the town in terms of both time and money, and an insufficiently vetted process can be wasteful. Looking at the amendment now, you can see that the Historic Districts Commission becomes involved right away. This is important because it is the charge of the commission to consider the merits of our historic districts. This is done on a monthly basis at our meetings. Asking the commission to make an investigative report on the merits of a proposed change to our districts should be a logical step in the process. In the amended process, there is both an initial report and a second final report required of the commission. The final report is written after input from the planning board and residents and is submitted to the select board. The amended process can take as much as 6 months for the town to consider and reconsider the proposal for change. The historic district hopes you agree that a change to Section 12 of Chapter 40 would benefit the town and that you will vote yes on Article 29. Thank you.
So, do we hear the opinions of the board?
Are you finished with your presentation?
Let me just do this then.
Sure.
I have some slides. So if I could go to basically the, I guess, the first slide for the existing, that's the one. You'll recognize the slides, and this gives you a little time to look at them. These are the slides that Fred presented. And basically the current process does not involve any necessary involvement of the Historic Districts Commission. So if you go to the next slide, this is the first half of the process that's proposed by the procedure in your warrant. And you see the Historic Districts Commission is intimately involved. If you go to the third slide.
Can you talk a little louder? I think some people are having a hard time hearing.
If you go to the third slide then, you can see the rest of the process. And the hope for this is that this will, with the involvement of the Historic Districts Commission, with the necessary hearings, being sure that everybody is called in, everybody has a chance to weigh in on what's going on, that we can be deliberate in the way we create historic districts, and that the process will be understandable to citizens, and it will not seem, arcane or as if it sprung from nowhere. So I ask that you support, Historic Districts Commission to ask that you support Article 29. Thank you.
Does the Finance Committee have a position?
Finance Committee takes no position.
Can I have a report from the Select Board?
The Select Board supports 3-2.
Is there a minority report?
There is not.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 29? In the front, please.
Justin Finnegan, Planning Board. The Planning Board voted unanimously to support this warrant article. Thank you.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on this article? Down here and in the middle.
Thank you.
Bill Maniscalco, 126 Hemlock Road. Historic Districts Commission didn't say, and Ms. Brown was too polite to say, was what many of us know, the unfortunate incident that happened at the end of 2019 when there was a special town meeting called just for such an article that we're hoping to avoid with these new procedures, where there was no, in essence, attempt to preempt the owner's rights by involuntarily converting her property into a historic district. And because there was no deliberation ahead of time involving responsible parties and organizations like the Historic Districts Commission, we had to, the town had the great expense of a special town meeting, and many of us were there, end of December 2019. And I think that, so it's not a theoretical situation, and I think that this is a, this change in process makes it deliberate, responsible, and technically accurate. And it is not an undue burden on any person or group of people who legitimately want to create or expand a historic district. So I think that this is a very important and responsible change that we need to make.
In the front here, please.
Marie Rock, 26 Whispering Pine Road. I echo what the previous speaker said. I fully support this article. I understand that, you know, some liberties can be taken without it, so I therefore support it. Thank you.
Anybody else on this article? In the balcony? Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 29 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed, please raise your cards. Okay. That passes by well more than majority. At this time, it is 10:28. And I would take a motion to adjourn and reconvene to here, Lincoln-Sudbury Regional High School, tomorrow, May 4th, 2022, at 7:30 p.m. Is there a second? All in favor? Thank you.